If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow, I feel personally attacked. Welcome back to the Gillette Health After Hours podcast. In this episode, we'll talk about how you should look at your health influencer that is giving you health advice, strength advice, fitness advice, really the equivalent of picks or it doesn't matter that happens in bodybuilding.
Yeah, so these starter pack memes have been going around and they're fairly popular. Some of them are tasteful and funny. And we sort of created 4 categories that we'll go through of like, if you're going to give advice on health or longevity, then you should sort of be checking these boxes, like, you know, post your stats, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Our friend, Dr. Nick Norwitz, has discussed doing this podcast with us. So he will give some of his own advice in between.
Every influencer is going to have different criteria for what, you know, constitutes a good receipt. Some people say, oh, like body comp, the weight of the lift adjusted for body size. You're talking about Jeff Nippert, and I fall into that camp as well. I'm tiny. I can't bench 300 pounds, but I can bench 190% body weight, which I think is pretty good. And I can bang out 100 pushups in a set and do muscle ups. So does that qualify me to give strength advice, even though I don't hit the 300 pound bench? Bottom line, each individual influencer can come up with their own criteria in a manner that fulfills self-serving bias. So I think people should be on the lookout for that. If somebody's saying, oh, like, you know, I can deadlift a lot, but they're 6'5" and using PEDs, and like, whoop-de-doo.
Wow, I'm 6'5", and I occasionally take HCG for my varicocele that I've previously mentioned. And occasionally my Giga Chad dose of 70 to 100 milligrams of testosterone cypionate per week. So as someone who's 6'5 on PEDs, I suppose my response to that is people have different criteria. Why not just inform people of all of the above? Or if you don't have a specific thing that's particularly impressive, for example, if you have a very low deadlift, perhaps don't give people as much advice on the deadlift. Or if you have a high deadlift, but you get injured all the time doing it, perhaps you should also not give people advice. To be fair, before I turned 32 or however old I was, 31, when I started HCG for the first time, I also had essentially all these same criteria. So things have not improved significantly since then, other than my labs. My labs have changed pretty significantly in the last 3 to 4 years as I've done health optimization. But Nick's point is correct, depending on what advice you're giving when it comes to health and fitness. You do want to look for someone who does seem to know what they're talking about via personal experience. And ideally, I think you also want someone who's very open with what they do. For example, did I max the ACFT and run a 420 mile before taking anything whatsoever? Yes, absolutely. And can I still do one of those things? Yes. Can I still run a 4 minute, 20 second-ish mile at my current body weight? No. But can I run a 5 flat mile? Yes. So some of the things that would be impressive to someone are different. For example, if there's someone who wants a bodybuilding coach, then you probably want a bodybuilding coach that's not morbidly obese. Same as if you're looking to lose a lot of weight. Perhaps you don't care as much if your doctor is, morbidly obese, but you want them to either have a good body composition or show a very positive trend that they've improved on throughout their life. But to get started, the first is not strength standards. It's not aerobic standards. It is lab tests. So obviously, lab tests are personal medical information, which we are not forcing anybody to share. But as podcast listeners know, we basically share all of our medical advice, and we often joke, well, I guess because we talk about health and fitness, we have to share all of our labs and all the details of our lives.
Yeah, and we've been transparent with our medication, supplementation, our lab work, even our exercise performance metrics. Mm-hmm. We had the Gillette Health Games that we recapped, and DEXA scans that I think we both have posted or discussed, even when I was at higher than optimal body fat levels.
Yeah. Next time you should wait until you get that low, like sub 10% scan.
And then just talk about that one for the next 5 years.
Yes. Always use that. These are somewhat arbitrary, so I suppose you could say this is expert opinion, but these are much better than posting your biologic age clock. So don't really care what your true diagnostic inner age is. This is more helpful. A good start is having an optimal A1C. So assuming your A1C is accurate, 5.4 or below. Obviously, a lot of endurance athletes are not going to have accurate A1Cs. We've discussed that in the past. We don't have to get into the details of this podcast, but certainly comment below if you're not familiar with that, or even better, search for our previous podcast.
Say episodes. A1C or CGM.
Yeah, or fructosamine or glucose homeostasis. So next is a fasting insulin that should be under 6. So 6 point something, 7 point something, arguably not optimal, and a CRP of less than 1. And then we had some interesting things about ApoB that we came up with, and we will see what Nick thinks of these as well.
I wouldn't include ApoB as a criteria for, a lab metric that provides an influencer any degree of further ethos for a couple reasons. One, there's just like a genetic threshold. So by analogy, you're not going to say LP little a is a metric that people should post. Why? Because it's mostly determined by genetics and Pringle repeats. There can be some environmental input. But with respect to ApoB also, I think, the genetic threshold and also things that can vary it, there are lots of different etiologies. And so the raw ApoB number, I think, really provides little to no useful information on the quality of advice that person is giving. Again, not to be a hypocrite, you could say, well, this is self-serving bias, Nick, because your ApoB and LDL are very high and all your other metrics are perfect. So you're just reinterpreting the criteria or reframing them in a way that will serve you. Fine, fair critique. Nevertheless, it remains my opinion because there are different etiologies and physiological drivers for high ApoB, which may actually reflect that someone is lean, insulin resistant, metabolically flexible, and just happens to be low carb for whatever reason. In my case, it's IBD treatment, ketogenic diet for IBD. Anyway, but again, it's valuable to the listener. If they value low ApoB, then maybe it is relevant for that listener to include in their criteria. Maybe they shouldn't listen to me. Again, I would hope people just listen to the arguments first, but those are my off-the-cuff thoughts.
Responding to Nick's comments, it sounds like he is saying, what I'm saying in a different way, which is it's very interesting to take health advice from someone that does share their ApoB or LDL lipoprotein or their Lp(a). There are lots of causes for those to be high. And as people know, both of mine were relatively high at one point. And I have lowered both of them significantly, Lp(a) from 100 to about 25 nanomoles per liter. And my ApoB and LDL are probably about half what they used to be. And none of those is with a statin or a PCSK9. Again, there's other podcasts that we have discussed this at length when it comes to my health protocol. But the reason why it is interesting for health influencers, if you will, whether they're a doctor or a PhD or both, is even if genetics are a reason why it is high, genetics are also a reason why you have poor physique. So if you have a bodybuilding coach that started out with a very poor physique, and you can tell that he or she has transformed his or her physique despite poor genetics, then that's even more impressive than one that has started out with an elite physique. When it's certainly more impressive than someone who starts out with genetically low ApoB and Lp(a) that manages to avoid ASCVD. But what we think is, if you want to leave ApoB / LDL off, then all of these other markers must be optimal over the course of your lifetime. So think about your area under the curve or your average, not your median, because if you're particularly unhealthy for a few years, let's say you get uncontrolled psoriatic arthritis, your CRP spikes up, then you better start worrying about ApoB and LDL.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to see what I'm sure my A1C and glucose were fine, but during my college days, during the Pop-Tart bulk, I would bet my fasting insulin was not below 6. It was probably somewhere above that.
Yeah. Nick will probably splice in some info about here regarding lean mass hyperresponders. He does like to talk about that. And perhaps he'll add triglycerides less than 60. Things like that. You and I, we post our ApoBs, we post our Lp(a)s. Next is imaging tests. There's a lot of other labs that you could post, but I think that's a reasonable start. These are related to the imaging test. Again, if you're 50 plus, really at that point, we don't care as much what your cholesterol is. We want to see the coronaries and the carotids.
Yeah, I'd say 45 would even be reasonable for the CCTA. And this could be an alternative to the ApoB number, maybe assuming someone is in their later 30s. Now, a 20-year-old with an ApoB of 200 and a clean CCTA doesn't really mean a lot.
Yeah.
But if they are 39 and they've presumably had this ApoB elevated lifelong, it becomes a better gauge. But it's still not a perfect exposure window. Because if you're looking at someone who maybe recently adapted the ketogenic diet and now they're a lean mass hyperresponder, that question is being looked at right now in, you know, studies by Mr. Feldman and Dr. Norwitz, who we've spoken to and spoken about. So that'll be really interesting data to follow. So CCTA, that's part of the checklist. You've got looking at DEXA, not just for body composition, but also bone density. So that's pretty easy. Just don't be osteopenic or osteoporotic if you resistance train regularly and your micronutrients are in check and you don't have any sort of genetic predisposition to bone loss, that one should be a pretty easy bar for most people.
Yeah, certainly. This includes VAT, visceral adiposity. And by the way, there's different passing grades. So if someone's talking about health and fitness in general, then maybe a passing score under 20% body fat as a male, under 28% as a female, again, on a DEXA. A lot of times bioimpedance reads significantly different. And this is just for standardization purposes. And we do like DEXAs because it shows you other data. But if they're giving you fat loss advice at some point in their life in order to get an A passing score, and again, we will flash these scores up on the screen and or put them in a description, then it makes sense for a male to have gotten down to 12% on a DEXA and a female to have gotten down to 20% or below on a DEXA because they have practiced out what they're actually doing for fat loss.
Yeah, and this is the one I think would catch some of the keto influencers who are relatively higher body fat percentage and are probably covering up, not intentionally, but just by nature of not taking in carbohydrates, they're going to have less insulin secretion. So their glycemic metrics may look great, but the DEXA scan will show you what the body composition, and then even more importantly, the visceral adipose tissue, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Another way to meet this requirement, I suppose, not necessarily the bone density or the visceral adipose requirement, because it is possible to look shredded, even Thomas DeLauer, Dom D'Agostino shredded, and still have visceral adipose, but certainly some people are very obviously well below 12% body fat, even on a DEXA. Next is VO2 max, and we prefer looking at VO2 max from a variety of different ways. Yes, you can get things like a VO2 master that we've talked about, but ideally you look at it running and rowing and possibly cycling as well.
Yeah, real world performance, although with cycling I would push back a little bit there because it is, to my knowledge, maybe with swimming, one of the only forms of endurance exercise that can cause loss of bone density. So if all you're doing is cycling and you're in a, let's say, undernourished state, you're not putting a lot of stress on the bones that way, and you can actually cause some bone breakdown. Same thing with the long distance swimming in an undernourished state. So it's there as optional. Like, certainly a lot of VO2 max testing is done on a cycle ergometer, but I think that rowing and running are probably more functional and going to be easier for more people to do.
Yeah. Also, of course, if you're a male, then quickly touching your perineum to a cycling seat can cause permanent impotence. So I definitely recommend never touching your perineum or prostate to a cycling seat.
At least not quickly. You said quickly touching it.
Slowly touching it. If you ever touch your perineum to a cycling seat, then it can permanently cause impotence.
That's why I recommend just taking the seat off of the bicycle.
There's a one in one zillion chance. Anyways, that was sarcastic. Next is partly to give health advice, but more to provide strength and conditioning advice. Again, if you're giving advice for fat loss, then it makes sense that, perhaps you're in my situation. I've mentioned that I lost a significant amount of fat right after I had my first child. So when it comes to like losing that dad fat and also body recomps after, being a mother, certainly me and my wife have been through it and gotten pretty lean. But in order to give strength and conditioning advice, it does make sense that that person is relatively strong and conditioned.
It's almost too logical.
So these are expert opinion standards, which means that I pulled them out of my butt with no reference whatsoever, other than listening to a lot of Andy Galpin, Mike Isratel, and Lane Norton podcasts. And I know that there are also a lot of physicians that are powerlifters that would meet these strength and conditioning standards, as you and I both do, I'm sure, that would not meet the health standards or the imaging standards or the aerobic standards. So meeting one of these standards is not impressive to me. But if you can meet three of them or four of them, then it's relatively impressive. Anyways, for bench press, again, this is bench, squat, deadlift, keeping it relatively simple. We could add a bunch of other things. I joked about adding kipping pull-ups to this.
For technique, right?
Yeah. See how, if you can do a kipping pull-up without injuring your shoulder, then you're in great health.
A lot of people can check that box, but they've injured their shoulder or shoulders.
Yeah, that's mostly a joke. That'll be a podcast for a different time. Bench press for males is 1.5 times body weight, or if you don't want to bother with 1.5 times or whatnot, then just use 300 pounds. Average male in America weighs 200, average female weighs 170. I think those are reasonable things to base strength standards on. So if you're a male and you can bench 300 and you're a female, you can bench 155 or perhaps 170 if that's average, then that is a impressive feat, and that person is reasonable to be listening to strength and conditioning advice from. Squat, I had 350 for male, 250 for female. Maybe that needs a little bit higher for female. Deadlift is 400 for male and 325 for female.
Yeah, so if you're moving some pretty good weight around in the gym, then you know a little bit about training or you're very genetically gifted. And this kind of reminds me of like whenever people would give gym advice in the gym and go on social media, and they'd be like, oh, I can't believe it. This person tried to come up to me and give me advice, but I'm literally bigger and stronger and leaner than them, but they're trying to correct me on what I'm doing wrong.
Yes. I like how Zach Talander says this, and I've heard this a few other times, but when somebody tries to give him advice, he says, post your total. Post a video of your Olympic weightlifting total. Zach is Chris Williamson's roommate, and Zach also has a great YouTube channel as well. And I doubt that anybody has ever had a higher Olympic weightlifting total than Zach Talander. He's not I don't think he's an elite Olympic weightlifter, but he's good enough to where there's very few individuals that lift more than him.
That are simultaneously caring enough to call him out and also have a higher total than him.
Yeah.
Plenty of people care enough to call people out for whatever reasons. But, you know, if you have these sort of stats checked away, like let's say somebody calls out Dr. Gillette and they're like, oh, well you're like, okay, post your lipids. Post your DEXA.
Oh, yeah. Post your.
Post this.
Post your DEXA. Yeah.
They're like, yeah, oh, well, Dr. Gillette has long femurs, so he probably can't squat 500 pounds.
I can't squat 500 pounds yet. That is a potential future goal. But if there's a diminishing return. So once someone squats, again, about 350 pounds as a male, 250 as a female, you've kind of met that requisite minimum to where it's reasonable that person gives strength advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, there are diminishing returns and increased risks and harder to recover from more intense training and heavier tonnages when you're lifting that sort of weight.
Mm-hmm. Next is aerobic standards.
We should specify that for the strength standards, we prefer no equipment, which I just recently learned that raw powerlifting doesn't necessarily mean no equipment. So specifically no equipment. I'll make one exception there. I think headphones are okay. Can we agree that headphones are okay for setting your one rep max, setting your PR? Or is that equipment?
Sure. Raw or no equipment? Can you wear shorts? Can you wear a shirt? Can it be a deadlifting shirt? Can it be a bench shirt? Can it be a squat shirt? Can it be a squat suit?
Camo shirt.
Can it be wraps? Can it be a sleeve? Can it be a springy stiff sleeve or just a regular springy sleeve?
Normal clothes, anything you could buy at, let's see, what's a store that wouldn't sell any kind of sleeves or assistive equipment?
I don't know. Walmart probably has at least wrist wraps and.
Yeah. A Dollar General. If you can buy it at Dollar General, you can use it for your unequipped strength.
People are going to get these stretchy rubber band things and just wrap them around their knees and elbows. Powerlifters and strongmen and CrossFitters always find a way to cheat. I mean, it's not cheating because it's within the rules. They always find a way to bend the rules in order to basically cheat.
If I see it in the video and I don't like it, then it doesn't count.
Yeah. What about PEDs? How many PEDs can you be on?
As many as you want to, as long as you have clean CCTA.
And clean labs? And so I guess if everything's clean, then more power too if you can use more PEDs. How about this? Whatever is prescribed by your physician or whatever is over-the-counter and supposed to be over-the-counter for humans. So not
a lot of things are over-the-counter in Thailand.
If someone lives in Thailand or visits Thailand, I suppose that's fair game. As long as their labs can be normal.
Labs and CCTA can be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of that over-the-counter stuff might drive up the CRP.
Yeah, seems pretty likely. Anyways, to finish off the very arbitrary aerobic standards that I went with, and then we can go and find James's standards, which he based off actual numbers, which I don't like in this case. I like my expert opinion. having a background from as a runner and having run and I suppose lifted and done all these standards myself, I feel qualified to talk about these things. But for the mile run, males and females, under 7 minutes, I thought was pretty reasonable. 5K, less than 20 minutes or so for both. Again, I thought pretty reasonable. Maybe a bit slower for females, so we'll have more on that later. 400-meter run, less than about 65 seconds for males or 70 for females. 500 meter row, less than a minute and a half for male and 135 for female. Maybe even 140 would be more fair.
Yeah. Oh, and that seems like a harsh number. But if you're looking at the population average weight for women, 170, yeah, then the 135 makes more sense. Whereas if you're looking at someone who, let's say a female that weighs 110, 120 pounds, I think that's virtually impossible to achieve. So they're going to have to put on more muscle mass to do that.
If they're giving strength advice, then even if someone is, 5'1", then they probably should weigh more than 110 pounds. 110 is not really a reasonable...
5'1". I want to see a
5'1 and 110 pounds. Yeah. And let's say this hypothetical fitness influencer, male or female, is 5 foot and weighs 110 pounds. In that case, even if their rowing time is a bit slower, their mile time is probably going to be extremely impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some ebbs and flows. Either or scenario.
Yeah. And there's a huge caveat to this at the end, which is maybe they haven't met any of these, but they're improving at a very fast rate, which is obvious, and showing how they're improving.
And showing, yeah, progress is the important thing.
Yep. That's evidence of progress as well. It's similar to someone who owns a landscaping company and does a really good job landscaping their own house. And you go to meet with them about a project and you see that it looks like the Garden of Eden, then you're probably going to sign up to get their landscaping.
Just, but if it doesn't, stay away from the apples.
Yeah. Or from the forbidden fruit, whatever sure. It is. Anyways, the last couple ones is 2K row under 640 for males, 720 for females. Rogue Echo Bike 50 cal challenge, which was fun, under 115 for males and 130 for females. Again, if you're a lighter body weight or shorter, then other things like your run and burpees are going to be better. And at least 30 burpees in 1 minute for any gender or age category.
Yeah, I particularly like that last one. That's the one I would put in the technique bucket, since you were a little bit sad that there wasn't a technique section here coming from your CrossFit background.
Yeah.
But the burpees, that's an important skill, and your technique becomes more important the older you are, getting onto the ground and, more importantly, getting up off of the ground without injuring yourself. Very important. Mm-hmm.
And so those are my off-the-cuff arbitrary values. We have a few more granular values here.
Sure. We go to this is under the aerobic side of things. And people may ask, since we said no equipment was allowed for the strength standards, super shoes are fine. They don't add 20% to your performance.
What about running sleeves embedded with SARMs? Can we drop a link to that study in the description?
We should drop a link to that study. If you borrow your buddy's running sleeves and he happens to be taking lots of SARMs and then you absorb some of those SARMs, the Olympic Committee or USADA, the arbitration court cleared them. So we would clear them as well.
Yeah. I see that you went by VO2 max values by age and gender. And then you went 75th, 90th, and 95th percentile. To me, that's kind of boring, but I guess it is nice to cite a source and get some more actual values. And then you calculated them out for both rowing and running. Yeah. And rowing looked pretty reasonable, and running, frankly, did not.
Well, we'll post this chart for people to kind of look and see where they stack up. So even if they are not 30 to 39 years old that we looked at here, they can see where they fall, like what their VO2 max should be if it's average or if they're trying to strive for that 95th percentile, a pretty high bar, at least the younger you are. Mm-hmm. So for rowing 2,000 meters, this is sort of the equivalent to the mile run. It takes a little bit longer. And on the Concept 2 website, there are boxes you can click for highly trained versus untrained. So the highly trained, that comes from people who are like collegiate or Olympic rowers.
Yes.
They're just expected to row faster even at a lower VO2 max. So your 50th percentile for men is about 736 to 756. So just a touch under 8 minutes. Your 75th percentile would be anywhere from 655 to 729. And the 95th percentile would be between 550 and 650, which seems pretty easy to hit like a 650 if you're a relatively heavier, especially a 200-pound male, which is what these values are based on. But those are the data. So I think somewhere in the middle of those is where most people are going to land, because most people are not going to hop on a rower for the first time and knock out a 650 2K.
Depends on who you're talking to, but I suppose not most people.
Did that happen to you?
I'm not sure when I rode my first 2,000 meter, but that's a very easy 2,000 meter time for me, at least. Yep.
So looking now at the female times, 50th percentile, again, this is ages 30 through 39, 823 to 832. 75th percentile would be right around 803 or 805. 95th percentile, 714 to 735. And this is putting in a weight of 170 pounds, the female population average. So if you're lighter, times are going to be a little bit lower, or higher, rather. You're going to row slower. If the weight is higher, your times are going to be a little bit lower because you're going to be rowing faster.
Yeah, pretty good chart. And we will also post the running chart and compare that, because this is what particularly irked me. They used a type of the Jack Daniels formula, which a lot of runners are accustomed to.
Tennessee whiskey? You do say runners like to drink.
Different Jack Daniels.
Oh.
Runners, swimmers, and cyclists love to drink alcohol, much more than the average person. Yep. There's many reasons for that, which, again, perhaps we'll talk about in a different podcast. But the male 50th, 75th, and 95th percentiles were pretty spot on, I thought. 23 minutes, 20 minutes, and 17 minutes. 17 seemed a bit fast. That's probably skewed because of the 5% of the population that are basically engineers that do a ton of running and disc golf. And they bring that distribution up pretty quick. 17 minutes is a quick 5K. In my high school track team and my college track team, there were many males that could run a 17-minute 5K, but it was a pretty decent time. But 21 and a half minutes, which is the 95th percentile for females, would be a very slow 5K time for a
female. Talking about at a college level.
And even at a high school level, too. 17 minutes in high school would win a lot of the smaller 3A to 4A meets, where 21 and a half minutes would be nowhere close. You'd have to be at least mid to low 19s to win as a female. So this is several minutes off. I've slightly skewed the times, honestly, not as much as they should be. Again, because the average female that is somewhat based off this for the 50th percentile is a 170-pound female. And the average male is a 200-pound male.
Yeah. And actually, the weight isn't taken into effect when we're running, because you're sort of carrying that weight with you.
Correct.
So it's very hard to be a heavy and fast runner, like, you know, some of the High Rocks athletes or like Nick Baer, people who carry a lot of muscle and also are able to run very well.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let us know what you think about those times and then my updated times. I updated the mile times as well. Again, for the male side of things, the mile looked relatively on as far as VO2 max percentiles. But from the female side of things, the 50th percentile being a 907 mile just didn't seem reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, pretty high numbers. And I'm not intimately familiar with sort of the, you know, outcomes and what elite or even high school track numbers would look like. But setting the standards here, you've sort of got 820, 720, 620 as your like A, B, and C grades. So 620 being an A. And then for males, you've got it going, this is the 1 mile we're talking about. 7 minutes is a C, 615 is a B grade, and 515 or under is an A grade for a male. So what you would think is more likely to be the actual 75th percentile. And these numbers were pulled from the 30 to 39 age category, just because that's a relatively large chunk of probably our listener base and people who are interested in sort of making these improvements, striving for these goals.
Yeah. So that's how we got the information for VO2 max and aerobic exercise. You also got some standards for strength that we touched on my standards, but you also took Jeff Nippard's numbers. So I don't know if who you trust more, Jeff Nippard, me, a little bit of both.
Yeah, maybe the tall athletes can trust yourself, and people who are not 6 foot five might like Jeff Nippard's numbers. But we'll go through those.
Yeah. And short, strong, lightweight athletes love to do multipliers by body weight.
So I made this a little bit more fun. And hybrid athlete is, I guess, has been a thing for a while, but now people are using the term a lot more. Basically, just people who are lifting weights and doing some cardio, and all of a sudden now they're hybrid athletes.
I love how Nick Baer explains hybrid athletes. He says, I get it. There's no such thing as a hybrid athlete. It's a stupid term. However, everybody knows what it means. So I'm just going to call people hybrid athletes. It just explains people who do cardio, like running, and also lift weights, which everyone should do for health reasons.
Yep. And some people lift lighter weights and run slower, and some people lift heavier weights and run faster and farther. So we've created three tiers of, I guess, hybrids, if you will. So you can see which hybrid you are. And I assigned hybrid vehicles to them because why not? Mm-hmm. So if you are a Prius.
This is a passing grade, by the way.
It's kind of a C, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you love Toyota Priuses, as always, you can still leave rude, hateful comments to improve the algorithm. Not that rude and not that hateful. Not against any terms of service for any social media platform. But you can still leave mean comments and let us know that how Prius should actually be the best, because it has the best gas mileage.
Sure, yeah. And if you're a 200-pound male, then your Prius standards are as follows. 736 to 756, 2K row, 23-minute 5K, 7-minute mile, squat 250, bench 200, deadlift 300, 20% body fat.
So this is like the dad bod equivalent. If you're giving advice to people about health and fitness, and you post a shirtless picture and you have a dad bod like The Rock or Ryan Reynolds has a dad bod. Who else has a dad bod?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. If you have a dad bod, so it's still a passing grade and you're still probably relatively fit.
Top 20% of the population.
Yeah, likely so. Those are the standards for males. And then again, average female is 170 pounds. 2K row time would be 820 to 830. A 25-minute 5K run, very reasonable. 820-mile run, 170-pound squat, 85 bench, 215 deadlift, and 28 body fat on ADEXA.
Yep, so that's your Prius female health influencer. And this is kind of the beginner level. And the next, we have a car that looks a lot better, looks a lot cooler, but it's really not that fast.
Is that a Jaguar?
It's only a three-cylinder. And get this, this car actually plays engine noises through the speaker because the three-cylinder motor doesn't make a lot of noise. And that's a fact. It's a BMW i8. And if you are a BMW i8 male, you weigh 200 pounds, you row 655 to about 730, you run a 21-minute 5K, you got a 615 mile, your squat is 250 to 350, bench 2 to 300, deadlift 300 to 450, body fat's 15%. Looks a lot better, but the performance isn't all that much better.
It's like an alpha male. So most alpha male influencers are probably in this category.
They probably don't use their turn signals either.
Probably not. And they probably do drive BMWs. Again, feel free to boost the algorithm if you're a BMW driver. Next is the female category. And same concept, 170-pound hybrid athlete female. 8-minute 2K row, 23-minute 5K, 720 mile, squatting between 170 and 255, bench between 85 and 130, deadlift between 215 and 300. And 24% or lower body fat on a DEXA scan.
Yep. This is your intermediate level. So I think those are good numbers, and people can see if they fit into that category and then figure out a plan to make it into the advanced category. So the final hybrid vehicle here is the McLaren, I think it's a P1, I think is what it's called. It's a hybrid. Hmm. But I like to describe it as almost as fast as a Tesla.
That's brutal.
So 200-pound male, 550 to 650 2K row, probably closer to the 550 mark on that. A 19-minute 5K, a 515 mile. You squat 350 to 500. You bench 3 to 400. You deadlift 450 to 600. And your body fat is 12%.
I like those numbers. For a 170-pound female, between 715 and 735, 2K row, or less than that if you're Maddie Gillette. 21-minute 5K run, 615 mile run, squat 255 to 300, bench 130 to 170, deadlift 300 to 385, or potentially probably more than that if you're Maddie Gillette again, and body fat of 20%, again, not year-round, but having got down to at least 20-point-something percent as the advanced category.
Yeah, so we'll probably put this up as slides when we do the social media post, and you can comment and let us know which category you fall into, whether you're a Prius, a BMW i8, or whether you are a McLaren. What kind of hybrid athlete are you?
If you meet some of the criteria from one car, but some from a different one, or if you meet one-third from all of the categories, do you move up or do you move down?
Got to round down. You have to satisfy all the criteria.
All the criteria. So if I meet every single criteria for the McLaren car, but I have a slow 5K time, if it's only 23-something minutes, then I am a Prius.
You're a Prius.
It certainly pays to be well-rounded. Anyways, let us know your thoughts in the comments. We will do a follow-up on this, and although I think you and I have talked about or posted all of these criteria that we have done ourselves, we will do so again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So look for an updated mile time to come for myself, because my initial mile time was pretty slow, and subsequent ones still slow, but I'm chipping away at it. Let us know your times and which ones you're working on. It seems like running is becoming popular again, kind of making a comeback, or maybe it was popular all along and now people are just talking about it more. Social media.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
One more caveat. All of these times should have come in the past 12 months or so.
Yeah. You can't do it once and then never do it again.
Like, yeah. Otherwise, I'll just use my 15-something minute 5K time from college or like my 420 mile, which should no longer count. I'd love it if it did count. But 12 months is the cutoff for that. Let us know how you score. And as always, thank you for your time and for listening. And may God bless you with health and happiness.
Thanks for reaching out to me about this podcast, guys. I'm happy to give my 2 cents. Sorry for the poor camera quality. I'm in a hotel room in Vegas. I'm going to give kind of my high-level overview feedback rather than nitpicking individual metrics, which I thought were very interesting to listen to. And you might not like it because it's kind of hand wavy, but I think one thing we can all agree on is like the quality of the advice. You can just say like, what is this person saying? What is the literature they're citing? How much sense do they make? And, you know, how do they articulate their advice? Always trumps any individual metrics. I think it's really hard to create thresholds. And that can be deceptive because it creates like an apples and oranges comparison between, quote, influencers. So I think that there are the obvious things, like it's a little weird if you're trying to give like strength advice and you can't do a chin-up. But you never know what an individual circumstance is. And influencers are subject to those circumstances as well. So taking myself as an example, you brought up the example of osteopenia. And also there were like performance times for various running distances. Now, when I was a kid, like 17, actually 18 at the time, I set my marathon PR. I could do a 2:45 marathon. Could I give good aerobic training advice? Absolutely not. I was just a fast runner. I was gifted and I ran a lot. That was it. And I ended up getting very sick and got to a point where I couldn't even run a mile. But actually during that period, actually following during recovery, I studied a lot of physiology, and I can tell you there was a point in time, a cross section, where I probably still couldn't run an 8-minute mile, but I could give you way better advice than when I was running, you know, a 2:45 marathon. So there are always like context and circumstance. And the number one thing, the most important thing always, is like, what is the quality of the advice? And that's annoying because it doesn't provide a clear heuristic or framework, but I don't think there is any clear heuristic or framework. And I think another high level thing to acknowledge is that every influencer is going to have different criteria for what, you know, constitutes a good receipt. Some people say, oh, like body comp, the weight of the lift adjusted for body size. You're talking about Jeff Nippert, and I fall into that camp as well. I'm tiny. I can't bench 300 pounds, but I can bench 190% body weight, which I think is pretty good. And I can bang out 100 pushups in a set and do muscle ups. So does that qualify me to give strength advice, even though I don't hit the 300 pound bench? Bottom line, each individual influencer can come up with their own criteria in a manner that fulfills self-serving bias. So I think people should be on the lookout for that. If somebody's saying, oh, like, you know, I can deadlift a lot, but they're 6'5" and using PEDs, and like, whoop-de-doo. I don't think that's necessarily like, you know, evidence that they can actually provide good advice. Furthermore, bear in mind that with that self-serving bias comes a tendency to believe that what you're doing, or maybe the core of your routine, will generalize. So if you're a 30 or 40-year-old male who's large and on PEDs and can lift a lot and have a lot of time in their life to focus to, say, bodybuilding because that's your passion, it doesn't mean you're going to give good general advice on strength training. Whereas maybe that 110-pound, 5'1" individual you were talking about, young, small woman, or maybe she's a physician, is just really busy, doesn't spend a ton of time doing strength training, but knows how to strength train efficiently and has great strength to body weight metrics. And maybe can give way better advice than the gorilla who deadlifts 800 pounds. You know what I mean? So we can create thresholds. I honestly don't know how helpful they are. I think it's all about, you know, an influencer building trust with their audience, which comes from, in part, just providing consistent good advice and being open-minded. But then, of course, there is an optics practicality element. Nobody's going to take off giving body fat loss advice when their body fat is 25%. It's just practically not going to take off. Whether or not you think it's a valuable metric, you're not going to become an influential individual. Delving down maybe a little bit more into specifics with respect to lipids, because you tagged me specifically on that, I wouldn't include ApoB as a criteria for, you know, a lab metric that provides an influencer any degree of further ethos for a couple reasons. One, there's just like a genetic threshold. So by analogy, you're not going to say LP little a is a metric that people should post. Why? Because it's mostly determined by genetics and Pringle repeats. There can be some environmental input. But with respect to ApoB also, I think, you know, this genetic threshold and also things that can vary it, there are lots of different etiologies. And so the raw ApoB number, I think, really provides little to no useful information on the quality of advice that person is giving. Again, not to be a hypocrite, you could say, well, this is self-serving bias, Nick, because your ApoB and LDL are very high and all your other metrics are perfect. So you're just reinterpreting the criteria or reframing them in a way that will serve you. Fine, fair critique. Nevertheless, it remains my opinion because there are different etiologies and physiological drivers for high ApoB, which may actually reflect that someone is lean, insulin resistant, metabolically flexible, and just happens to be low carb for whatever reason. In my case, it's IBD treatment, ketogenic diet for IBD. Anyway, but again, it's valuable to the listener. If they value low ApoB, then maybe it is relevant for that listener to include in their criteria. Maybe they shouldn't listen to me. Again, I would hope people just listen to the arguments first, but those are my off-the-cuff thoughts. I would say it's something that we struggle with. I say we with being a term for influencers broadly because, you know, zooming back again, like, there is a practical element to it, right? It's the currency of the realm. If people value a lean physique, and I have a point to make, it's so easy to just flex my abs and be like, oh, listen to me. It will get more clicks and it will get people to listen to my message if I'm talking intellectually about something, even with my shirt off, it'll just get more like engagement. And so I could rationalize it as a means to an end. Is that a cheap thing to do? Or alternatively, if somebody's throwing out that credibility factor, say I'm having a back and forth with another influencer and they post, you know, a physical performance metric or a body comp metric. Or let's just even like generalize it to other realms. And they're like, well, I'm a doctor and blah, 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 blah. And here's my H index and my citations. Do I then go, yeah, well, my body fat's 8%. I have a PhD from Oxford. I'm going to get an MD from Harvard. And my H index is higher than yours. And I have like 40 publications. Is that relevant to bring up? I would say not up front. It's not something I generally volunteer. But when somebody else is valuing a given metric, is it appropriate to then respond, given that they've presented that as currency that's valuable for them? Then I would say yes. So it's a little bit of a catch-22. You're getting my organic thoughts off the cuff here. I'm just getting back from a hike in Vegas. I hiked 6 miles to a Whole Foods just to get some food from this mini fridge. And hiking 6 miles, by the way, in Vegas in 100-degree Fahrenheit weather is very different than in Boston. But guess what? I guess I have decent athletic performance, so it wasn't a problem. Anyway, I think it's an interesting topic. Sorry for the rambling, guys. It was something that I thought would be better to do organic off the cuff. But it's hopefully a discussion that we can open up and have a round table on, because I think it's just important to get people to think. Again, I don't think there are actually criteria with respect to mirror tests or, you know, performance metrics or lab metrics that can be generalized. But I think it's a conversation worth opening about what is valuable, you know, and what should a person achieve in order to have a high degree of authority in a particular realm. Again, I would argue there's too much individual circumstance, be it personal or family or basically personal medical history or just like where you are in life. If you're a, you know, a physician scientist working 90 hours a week and you're a parent, like you might know a ton about physiology, metabolism, and give amazing advice and still not be able to bench press, what do you say, 150% body weight. It's not going to discredit the quality of, or shouldn't discredit, in my opinion, the quality of the advice you're giving. So I think it's a little bit of a perversion to say that there should be these performance and lab metrics, because quite honestly, the people that will generate, you know, the influencer type are also going to be the person who's like constructed their lives in order to achieve these metrics. I will tell you personally, when you have more time and flexibility to focus on your athletics, like I'll use myself as an example. Myself, doing 200 push-ups in a set, running a sub 515 mile, doing 10 muscle-ups, those aren't problems, but I guarantee or I will tell you that doing those things, achieving those cut points is way, way easier than like, you know, doing, you know, 24s every other night when you're in residency. It just is. And it doesn't mean that the person that's constructed their life to be able to achieve those metrics can give any better advice than the doctor or the scientist who's working their ass off, you know, at the hospital or in the lab. So this is a longer ramble than I intended it to be, but in general, I would challenge the idea that we should even have performance metrics. However, I'll acknowledge that there's a practical optics element to it. So irrespective of what my opinion is on that matter, the six-pack, the performance metrics, including the lifting metrics, aerobic metrics, and the labs are probably always going to have some degree of value in a social sphere, because most people aren't dorks like me who want to overanalyze and intellectualize this and ramble at their cell phone for 11 minutes. Probably lost basically everybody here. But nevertheless, you asked for my opinion. That's it, off the cuff. Now I'm going to go make some food because I haven't eaten in like a day. But happy to check out Vegas. So if anybody has any tips on what I should see, I'm going to have some fun. Peace.
I can't say it any better. That sums up the most important point with this video is the way that you articulate the advice and the way that you walk individuals through the evidence, which is the clinical literature, and the various benefits and detriments of whatever intervention, even if it is a type of diet, is going to trump all other things. The nuance to that is it's difficult to speak without too much medical jargon at a level that everyone can understand, while still being able to convey the details of the science and nuanced topics to the general public. And that is one thing that we have been working on a lot at Gillette Health and on this podcast, and one thing that our friend Nick does an excellent job of.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.